This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
If you've ever had a loved one in any sort of nursing care, especially towards the end in a hospice type situation, you may have encountered a situation where that loved one is sharing stories of things around them that may not be there, at least not to us. We're not able to see or experience, but are very real to them. Now, I'm not saying that in many of these cases, this is simply a mind that is getting older and is deteriorating and maybe producing these thoughts and these visions and is essentially in a dementia state. That is factual. That does exist. Not every time that this happens is it something paranormal. However, when you can connect some dots sometimes and you do the research, you may be startled on what you come across, just dismissing it as always being, oh, it's the dementia talking, may not be the most accurate way of dealing with a situation such as that. That's what one of our listeners found out as they were visiting their grandmother, and she was talking about the children playing outside of her window. What she discovers about what once went on outside of her window makes more sense than not. Take a listen. This is a nonfiction research narrative that I wrote for my MFA program at George Mason University. It's a shortened version of a much longer piece. I hope it flows well enough for you to get the full picture. I hope you enjoy. When I arrived at the nursing home to visit my grandma, she didn't greet me with her normal cheerful voice. Grandma, what's the matter?
Nothing.
Why do you look like you've been crying?
I was frustrated that she didn't want to tell me.
I plopped in a green and mauve flower-patterned armchair next to the window and waited patiently for her to answer. I felt my skin sticking to the arm of the chair, and I thought about the chair's cleanliness. I wondered how many other visitors had sat in this chair over the years. Was the arm sticky because of the dead skin cells it had collected from all the people who ever sat there year after year? Then I wondered if any elderly patients had accidents while sitting there. Surely the home would get rid of furniture that had been soiled, right? I always had these thoughts when I came to visit. Most times I'd sit on her bed in my mind. I assumed the bedding was changed out each day, maybe multiple times a day, and it made me feel that it was somewhat cleaner. Grandma sat across from me, slumped in a black leather and metal wheelchair. She was wearing her usual lavender sweatsuit with knee-high white athletic socks and her thick, soiled white therapy sneakers. What was different about her appearance is that her lips were dry and wrinkled, not painted or moisturized by her signature bright and creamy pink lipstick. Her gray and white hair was also disheveled and looked like a used cotton ball, which was unusual for her because she had been a beautician for over 30 years and always cared about the appearance of her hair. "Well, I was trying to take a nap, but the little boy was just so mean to me," she said. My grandma's room at the nursing home was on the first floor. And after nurses gave her a bath, changed her bedpans, and dressed her, they often pushed her wheelchair close to her bedroom window, where she liked to nap, especially on sunny days. She told me that before I arrived, she saw children outside her window playing in the field. The children talked to her through the AC window unit and asked her to play with them. A paved parking lot was outside of my grandma's window. I could see my parked car. Grandma had been saying things for a few months that didn't make sense, and I was okay with that. She was in her late 80s and had been sick with diabetes for a long time and congestive heart failure for a few years. Maybe now she was getting dementia, too, although the field and the children were just her vision. The pain she felt was visible to me.
so I continued the conversation to try and comfort her.
"Can you tell me more about the boy and the other kids?"
"They're all nice kids," she said, "except for that little boy. He's so mean to me. He teases me and says horrible things."
"Like what?"
"Just horrible things." She said his words were so bad that she would never repeat what he said.
"Okay, Grandma, I understand."
There was a long pause of silence between us, so I changed the topic. I hoped that if I started talking about my daughter, Taylor, her 2-year-old great-grandmother, that it would cheer her up. We had a few good laughs about Taylor, but I sensed that she was still upset and distracted by what she thought had happened with the little boy.
She had talked about the children outside her window before as well as Alex Trebek talking to her through the television, and a few times I caught her talking to her children when I walked into the room, but I'd never seen her so upset about one of those experiences. I felt helpless and sad to see her in that way, especially knowing I was going to have to leave her alone again. If I could stay, and if my grandma told me that the little boy came back, I would play along and yell at him to go away through the AC window unit and leave my grandma alone, or else I'd tell his mom. I'd do anything to make her feel happy and safe.
I hated to leave, but I had to get back to my daughter. I said goodbye and slowly walked backwards out of her room and into the hallway, waving goodbye the whole time. Any other time, I would have just have left her room, walked down the hallway, and drove away in my car without looking back. This time, though, I waited in the hallway a few seconds and peeked back into her room. I wish I hadn't done that. She didn't see me, but her chin was tilted to her chest, and she looked sad and worried. The sight of that nearly ripped my heart straight from my chest. Real or not, I cursed that boy all the way to my car, and before getting in, I turned and verbally threatened the empty space in the parking lot between me and my grandma's window.
"You better leave my grandma alone, little boy."
My grandma's nursing home was near where she had lived in the suburbs of Philadelphia for more than 50 years. Her move into the nursing home coincided with my family's move from the same Philly suburbs to 2 hours south in Northern Virginia for my husband's work. The drive to the nursing home was not long, but Taylor started preschool and became involved in weekend activities that limited the convenience of our schedules to visit my family in Pennsylvania. When I found time for a break, I would make a point of driving to Pennsylvania to visit my dad and mom, grandparents, and other family. Any time I had with my grandma was precious to me, and anything other than comforting her at this moment would have left me feeling heartless. My mom and aunt made the decision to place my grandma in the nursing home when caring for her became unmanageable. Complications from arthritis, diabetes, and congestive heart failure made it difficult for my grandma to accomplish everyday routines like getting out of bed, feeding herself, or even answering a phone call. Although she enjoyed the company of the nurses, physical therapists, and her roommates at the nursing home, my grandma wanted to be at her home. In her red brick Cape Cod with a blue carpet, peach kitchen, purple bathroom, and pink bedroom, even if it meant she'd be alone. Her husband, my grandpop, had been dead 17 years before her living in the nursing home, and her daughters had moved out decades before that. After my visit, I couldn't shake the nostalgic feeling and a growing curiosity. Fearing criticism or disbelief about what medical conditions might have caused her to have this vision, I didn't tell anyone about what happened. I wasn't sure if I believed her, but I was compelled by how upset she was and the image of her when I left, slumped in that wheelchair, sad and worried. To write a list of details about her story of the boy, I wanted to record the details so I wouldn't forget them, and because I was curious to somehow research her story. I started my research without expectations, and when I looked for connections between the nursing home and any accounts of children, what I found made me believe that I might not be leaving her alone when I'm gone. On January 24th, 1882, 23 orphan children burned to death in the Great Fire of the Philadelphia Orphan Asylum in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Based on eyewitness accounts and investigative reports, the local authorities declared that the fire was a result of the flawed structure that surrounded the boiler. Approximately 100 orphans lived in the asylum at the time of the fire. 70 orphans were immediately accounted for, and authorities eventually found 7 orphans freezing and alive in the nearby field. They had hoped that the remaining 23 orphans ran to a neighboring house. The reality, however, was that the missing children had burned to death inside of the asylum. After the Great Fire, the surviving orphans relocated several times to orphanage establishments in the suburbs of Philadelphia. At each relocation, the children suffered further loss from various outbreaks, including scarlet fever, until finally the suffering orphans were last uprooted to another nursing home. A nursing home that would have its name changed to the name where my grandma resided today. It was February of 2010, and because life got in the way, I didn't get a chance to talk to my grandma about my research before the nurses at the home called to tell my family that my grandmother had passed away in her sleep. Unlike other funerals I attended, my grandma's body resembled what she looked like in life. The funeral home painted her nails a soft pink and defined her smiling lips with her signature bright pink lipstick. They smoothed her skin with the ivory cover-up, with just a touch of blush to flush her cheeks. They curled her gray bangs downward like a questing wave resting on her forehead. She looked full of life. At her funeral service, I kept composed to read her eulogy I wrote on behalf of her 5 grandchildren, but I might have collapsed to the floor if it weren't for my husband holding me up when I had to leave the room where her body lay in a casket. Like the way I felt many times saying goodbye to her at the nursing home, I hated to leave her alone. 2 years later, in February of 2012, I couldn't shake a nagging feeling that there was still something more to my grandma's story about the kids yelling at her through the AC window unit. I called the nursing home, explained I was conducting research regarding the property grounds, and the operator connected me to the maintenance director at the center, Mark. I told him that I was interested in learning about the history of the building and the property. I was afraid to mention anything about my grandma's visions in connection to what I had discovered about the history of the nursing home. I was afraid he'd refuse my phone calls and that I'd lose any chance of vindicating my grandma's visions. Mark and I made small talk about the way the property used to look. He told me that the grounds boasted the biggest pine tree in Pennsylvania, that they had the second biggest oak tree in that area. He said the country back in the day and the fields and trees surrounding the building were beautiful. So there was no parking lot like there is now, I asked. Oh no, he said, that was a field. They made a lot of changes since then, and since your grandma lived here, you probably wouldn't recognize the place. They tore down the pillars and the 2 gatehouses. The gatehouses, I asked. I remember the pillars that Mark referenced, but I didn't remember seeing gatehouses on the property. In fact, I'm not entirely sure I would have known what a gatehouse looked like, even if I saw one. There are really old buildings, he said. This place used to be a home for children, and they lived in the gatehouses. When Mark presented the information about the children, I took a chance and told him the real reason I was calling. I expected him to completely discount my grandma's story, call me crazy, and hang up the phone. But he excitedly interrupted me and told me his story about the day he found an old gravestone on the property. The headstone sat in the middle of 3 holy trees. It had the names of 3 children on it, he said. It was the strangest thing. So I looked into it. He investigated historical documents kept on site and asked neighbors of the center if they knew anything about the buried children on the property. One neighbor told him that she had historical documents from her house stating that some of the orphans occupied it after a fire broke out at the orphanage. Another fire? The historical records and reports I found about the home before it housed and rehabilitated the elderly told stories of indentured and abused orphans. But I never came across a story about a fire. Mark provided me with a copy of the architectural plans of the orphanage, and as we were reviewing the plans, he realized that the playground for the children would have been directly outside of my grandma's window. My thoughts went directly to my grandma. During my visits, when I looked out her window, I only saw a parking lot. Was it possible that she, being so close to death, was able to see what it used to be? The orphanage playground? It would explain why there were so many kids outside of her window asking her to play, and why the mean boy was able to talk to her through the AC unit. With the evidence presented, I no longer felt that I could question the realism of her visions. And it left me believing that the stories my grandma told were very, very real.
This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Want a commercial-free experience of the show with access to the world's largest audio archive of ghost stories? Sign up at Apple Podcasts right now and try it for 3 days free. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories.